Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
College football fans get way less than any other sports fan in one regard. And we seem mostly okay with it. It is the Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday. How are y'all doing today? College football stadiums, for the most part, here's what you have. Basic concrete structures whose entire purpose is to surround a patch of grass like seven times a year. That's about as far as it goes at most locales. And at some huge universities, the football stadium, which until I will say maybe 10 years ago, some places this is still true, but until about 10 years ago, the football stadium, it was used about seven Saturdays a year, maybe eight for a spring game, maybe not. Maybe they have a spring game somewhere else. And if you talk to any coach, oh, the coach would tell you, that fill in the blank, isn't getting on my field. I coached football, defensive line, when I coached in high school. And there's nothing worse than when you go out for a spring practice and around the 40-yard line, you see a bunch of chunks of earth missing. Some divots, some just giant holes from where the track and field team's been throwing the discus and putting the shot. So there are a lot of football coaches, and nobody's getting on my field. And I kind of understand that. And so that's how it's been for a long time. Now there's concerts and other things that are becoming a little more routine. And it seems so far that it's been mostly country artists in the South packing giant stadiums that, I mean, I don't know. I don't remember Stevie Wonder ever playing Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge. All right. Taylor Swift did. Who is it? Is it Luke Bryan or Jason Aldean that has done a little bit of a stadium? Or is that Kenny Chesney or all of them?
All of the above.
Okay, all of them. Check. And so that's kind of what's been going on. But other than that, you've got this stadium that in most cases, there's a way for you to tell me that stadium's at least 100 years old. In almost, and you think about so many places, now it wasn't expanded to it until 1957 or 1972 or 2012, who knows? And there's been renovation after renovation after renovation after renovation. But in so many places around college football, you can look at the stadium and go, and in 1908, we played VMI and, you know, whatever, on this patch of grass, and there were 1,200 people here, and then you built everything up around it. But college football stadiums, for the most part, they are very basic, huge concrete structures that don't get a lot of attention when it's not being used. And when it is being used, it has one purpose: to be functional. You walk in an NFL stadium and you're not looking at aluminum bench seating for like 95% of the joint. You're not looking, if you think about it, close your eyes right now. If you walk into a college football stadium and it's at either field level or lower level, and you have a ticket in the upper level, I don't know, Dan, 90% of the college stadiums you've ever been to, is there another way to reach the upper deck than the endless spiral of concrete ramps?
No, I mean, it's either that or just, you know, keep basically doing a circle, like
yeah,
you said.
That's it, man. You don't have that in the NFL stadiums. Ladies, and we have a lot of ladies who listen. We're on only in the South, and, I mean, women know college football as well as we do. So apologies, but cover your ears, because maybe you don't know this and you don't need to know it. Dudes who are still listening, because ladies have, you know, peanut butter in their ears. Hit the bathroom at a Major League Baseball game. I don't believe you're getting the trough to make use of. The trough in college football, it's almost like a championship belt. I mean, like, Bama only has 12 troughs, but they claim 15.
I mean, the Superdome, though, is going to give you a run for your money because they still have the trough. And then when you want to wash your hands, you step on like a ring.
Oh, yeah.
And the water starts coming out. You step off,
yeah,
wash, you know, soap your hands. Yeah.
It's like a little water sprinkler. And that's an interesting point because I actually did go back and do some research on this stuff. I didn't just want to say, in general, like we think of the Superdome as the place that couldn't even keep their lights on. And the Superdome... It does get more attention than some of the other stadiums. Do you realize there's a stadium in the league that's 50 years older than the Superdome? Soldier Field. Now, Soldier Field is going back to the 20s. Bears didn't play there until like the early 70s. You know where the Bears used to play? Wrigley. A football field doesn't fit conveniently into Wrigley. And you had Soldier Field cross town, and so they started playing there in the 70s. Lambeau goes way, way back. Is it Rich Stadium still? No, Ralph Wilson Stadium for the Bills. That goes, gosh, back to the early 70s. That predates the Superdome. But there are a very few specific examples. Now, the reason, do you know why most of us think about the Superdome more than we do the other, quote, old stadiums in the NFL? Because the Superdome is still in the mix for a Super Bowl. And, in fact, they're not even in the mix. The Superdome gets it. And, by the way, it's not the Superdome. It's New Orleans that gets it. There is some sort of something in sports. There's some sort of value we assign to, oh, yeah, we've done that a whole lot of times before. And so we think that that adds some sort of value. And so the Superdome, the actual structure, gets some of that. New Orleans, there ain't no other place like it, man. I've never had anything but a great time visiting New Orleans. And so because of that, it's in the mix. It will be in the 4-year or 5-year rotation. But what does everybody else, everywhere in the league, what do you have to do? Build a new crib, you get a Super Bowl. What about New Orleans? Well, it's New Orleans. That's kind of a cool arrangement. I mean, you talk about signature on the recommendation. That's the NFL going, New Orleans is the most fun place in America. Sincerely, Roselle Tagliabue Goodell. So there are a few, but you know every one of them. If you look around most college football stadiums, it's not just that it's a very basic structure. It's that, and again, I'm not saying anything sinister here. The powers that be that could change it take so little interest in doing so that it's not even much of a topic. I will say the University of Georgia, and Dan, just jump in if I get anything off here. Greg McGarrity, who was the AD there, and he was a financial wizard, all right? He was really good at it. He was not so great at relations with the fan base because they're one of those I've talked about. There are certain fan bases that feel we're just an ATM to you. When Georgia, the first time I remember a light really being shined on Georgia's lack of facilities, and that's what it is, folks. And I mean like the fan experience at the stadium, it's been horrid. Was when McGarrity went to the fan, the donors, and Dan, was the first round like $90 million or so he wanted? Or was it 60 and then they bumped it later?
I think it was 90 the first time, okay, I believe. All right. I need to check on that.
So he comes out of the gate saying we need $90 million to upgrade stadium, locker room, recruiting lounge, practice, all of this stuff, laundry list, everything possible, except it wasn't everything possible. Wasn't much about the fans on there. Like, I don't know. Let me go through the mental list at Kyle Field, because I have not been to Kyle Field since it has been rechristened. Wider concourses, more and bigger bathrooms, no trough. Video board, instead of just hot dogs and popcorn, maybe you get sushi and empanadas. I don't know. I got to imagine at Texas A&M, you get empanadas anytime. Like, that's not a new thing. The Jamaican meat pies. Yummy. But whatever, you get more choices there. Folks, if you look around the majority of college stadiums, there is the only time that you really sit up and acknowledge, wait a minute, I pay all this money to sit on an aluminum bench bolted to concrete. And that's pretty much, oh, and there's the trough. Oh, and I get popcorn in the megaphone, you know, where the bottom's not in it, so after you eat all the popcorn, you can use it to yell at the opponents. That used to be like the height of the food and beverage options, was the popcorn megaphone. Then you started getting the cinnamon roasted pralines or whatever it was, and I thought, man, my gosh, is this Auburn or Manhattan? We got roasted pralines. That's what it is at most college stadiums. I basically don't drink. I've told you I'll have champagne at a wedding or something, but I was impressed. I was at the Bama-Missouri SEC title game. That would have had to been, what, 14? There were cupcakes with booze inside the cupcake already. Like, really awesome-looking cupcakes, which interested me, and in the big, tall icing, except it was infused with booze already. Because I walked up and I was like, how can a cupcake be $14? Oh, it's got a shot of Bailey's in it or something. So you don't get that on, well, it's college campus, but you don't get that type of food or beverage option, and we're good with it. In fact, let me ask, what do we get at a college stadium? We get to see the team that we love. And when I say love, I mean more so than just about any relationship with a pro team if you are south of Virginia. Okay, Eagles fans, well, that's kind of what you got. If you're a Bears fan, it transcends love. But in the South, we know what it is. It's college. It ain't pro in almost every case, which I've never understood. You know what no one's ever done? No one ever graduated from the Chicago Bears. Nobody ever went and lived at the Minnesota Vikings Stadium every day for 5 years until I finally was able to leave. You do that in college. It's supposed to mean more. Graduate from Temple, you're like, when do the Eagles play? Oh, we got the Giants Sunday. It's different. It's your heartbeat. I get it. But it's also your wallet. And we look around. The only time we seem to notice is when we're being hit up for money to actually spend on the stadium, but it's something that won't benefit us.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
So, Robert, I want to thank you for your time. I just don't think you're the right person for this position.
I don't understand. Was it something I said?
Well, we did a background check on you and found some things of concern.
If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you know how helpful a background screening can be. That's why companies that use Horizon Background Screening make smarter hiring decisions. Don't let the wrong hire put your company at risk. Get the real story on your candidates at horizonscreening.com. Horizonscreening.com.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
You guys are all part of the Taliban, man. I mean, you're a part of Al-Qaeda. You have changed our game and made it so hard to play defense for all of us poor defensive guys that, you know, I can't sit in church without shaking my leg or, you know, my hand starts shaking because I'm worried about what you guys are going to do next.
That's not true. The spirit of what he said is 100% middle of the bullseye. Nick Saban ain't never sat in church on a Sunday quivering over what the opponent is going to do next Saturday. I can promise you about that. But that was Nick Saban talking to offensive coaches on the Nike Coaches Clinic on Zoom. And he's on record. And it again, the spirit of what he's saying is accurate. I don't know why I picked this game, but back during Christmas break, there was a reason. I went on to YouTube. Amazing. Went on to YouTube and watched the – in fact, do this, everybody, right now, or just make a note if you're driving. 1984 Gator Bowl. It was Oklahoma State and South Carolina. Now, this is what the Gator Bowl – this is the patch of real estate they occupied 37 years ago. I want to say that was like number 7 versus number 9. In fact, South Carolina might have been higher than that. They were South Carolina was 10-1, had reached as high as number 2 in America. They played in the Gator Bowl. And do you know why? They were undefeated, had just beaten Florida State on national television. I think they improved to like 8-0, and they reached number 2, which is Gamecock's highest ranking ever, before or since. And they went up to Navy, and I want to say that they lost to a 2-6 Navy team. And do you also remember what happened that year in 1984? Who actually played that thing out? BYU. BYU was in the whack. They were ticketed to the Holiday Bowl. Do you realize that if South Carolina, an undefeated number 2 team in America, had just beaten 2-6 Navy and then won their final, I think, 3 games or 2 games? You would have had a national championship game in San Diego in the Holiday Bowl between South Carolina and Brigham Young. All that prevented that. So they're in the Gator Bowl. And if you go back and watch this, folks, that thing is played in like a 20-yard square in the middle of the field from like the 40 to the 40. It looked like tug of war. And so Oklahoma State would line 9 people up in a ball on the line of scrimmage. They would have someone to snap the ball to, and then he would turn around and hand it to Thurman Thomas. Not a running back, not a teammate, not a cat. Thurman Thomas, every time. South Carolina was a bit more diverse because they had 2 quarterbacks and they had 2 running backs, but they basically did the same thing as well. And it was played, it would look like in the middle of the field. And that's not what it is anymore. And if you attempt to play that way, a team with about 2/3 the talent of yours, they can beat you, and they might beat you pretty badly. That is the advantage, and that's what he's talking about, the schemes and taking advantage of rules, et cetera. What up, Dan?
You know, it's funny how trends and also perception can be regained, and they can also go a separate direction in terms of college football, and it involves Steve Sarkisian, because let's take a look at Steve Sarkisian as a coach and just a real quick cliff notes of his career journey. The hotshot goes and gets the head coaching job at Washington, does well enough to be able to come back to SC, and then runs into his troubles there, has to rehabilitate himself, goes to the NFL, flops, comes back to college. All of a sudden, he is the platinum standard when it comes to offense, and that's the way he's being looked at right now coming into that situation at Texas, because one piece of evidence for it is, do you know who is supposed to visit this summer as a quarterback prospect?
Who that?
Arch Manning. And Arch Manning is supposed to be the next hot shot prospect in the high school ranks right now. And it's one of those things that the only reason they're getting that visit right now is because of the perception that Steve Sarkisian has of coaching quarterbacks and coaching offense right now. And if he can land him, it's going to be because they played incredibly well this season. Once that starts to slip, then you're going to see the perception of Steve Sarkisian start to go away.
Yeah, and it's interesting that if, you know, and this is not just Sarkisian, so I'm certainly not picking on him, but if you looked at the resume of Tom Herman, he actually was a better hire, I think, 3 years ago than Sarkisian was now. It's just the cycle, and you get caught up in it.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number 1 in Georgia.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.
Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Like almost everybody else in the SEC, Auburn continues to prepare for a spring game. Missouri does not continue to prepare, and Kentucky's not going to have one. I think everybody else, though, is kind of in the mix, and that is, as I said, includes the Tigers. And boy, does their new coach have a lot on his plate. Want to welcome on now, guy who covers AU. You can get him at AU blog. That is for the OA News. It is Jordan Hill. Jordan, what's up, brother? How you doing today?
Hey, Chuck, doing great. How's it going?
Doing good. Appreciate your time. So what is, as best you can tell, given whatever access, what is the progress? Maybe just what is the impression Brian Harsin has, Mike Bobo has, of their new quarterback?
You know, I think it's slow and steady progress. We got a chance, and I will say we've gotten pretty good access so far. You know, I think it's sort of like the honeymoon phase of the new coach and the media. We'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, he had open practice.
Yeah, had a whole open practice, and then the week after that, we got to watch 40 minutes. I mean, I think that's about as much time as Gus Malzahn ever opened up.
About 12 periods or so, 15 periods.
Something like that. But with Bo, we had a chance to talk to Mike Bobo, not this past Monday, the Monday before that. And he said, you know, it's still early. By that point, Auburn had only practiced three times, but he was really speaking highly of the work he's seen Bo put in, you know, even going back to winter workouts. He said that he's a guy that's constantly asking questions in the media, in the meeting room. And, you know, that's got to be a good sign. You know, Bobo said that it can be a little intimidating for, like, a true freshman like Demetrius Davis, because Bo has been there and done that so much already. He's got so many different questions about this new offense. They're still kind of working things out. I was really impressed by the fact that Mike Bobo said that, you know, Bo has really focused on his fundamentals, his footwork, you know, going through his progressions. And I think that should be music to Auburn fans' ears, because that's been the big issue. I don't think anyone has questioned his talent. It's just consistently going through and you know, his arm mechanics, really his footwork in the pocket and knowing when to take off and when to just step up and you know, sort of hold his ground. That's been the thing that's been holding him back. It's been the thing that sort of led to, you know, not the kind of progress people wanted to see in his second year as a starting quarterback. But I think, you know, and we've talked about this before, Chuck, he's got two guys in Brian Harsin and Mike Bobo who have worked with plenty of talented quarterbacks, has gotten the most of those guys and sent several guys to the league. You know, they know how the quarterback position has to be played, and obviously Mike knows how it's going to be played in the SEC, just not only from playing it and also coaching it for as long as he has. They're saying all the right things, but when we've really talked to those guys, it was still kind of early. And I'll be intrigued with what they kind of say in the next coming weeks leading up to A-Days on April 17th. So they got a few more weeks. They got roughly eight practices, including A-Day to go. So they're still going to be looking at Bo and seeing what kind of progress and how much more consistency they can get out of him leading into the summer.
There's certainly, you know, what a coach, a coordinator may want, but what would you expect the Auburn offense, and I mean just like the identity, the personality, maybe just the formations, what would you expect the general playing personality of the offense to be this fall?
I think it'll be a good mix of spread and a lot of sort of what one of the reporters talking to Mike Bobo called old school, which I think is, you know, sort of a fair assumption with where we are in college football now, but getting in I form, getting in, you know, a single back there and just running up the gut. I mean, that's what Bobo talked about. He said, sometimes you got to let people know you're at the ballpark. And the way you do that is just line right up and run power right up the middle. And to me, I think it makes a whole lot of sense to kind of get a good blend of both spread, because there are a lot of guys in this offense that have been productive and sort of that spread look that was part of Malzahn's scheme over the years. But also, you know, you've got guys in Bobo and Brian Harsin, too, that aren't afraid to get out there and put one running back there and getting two tight end sets and just pound people. And I think that's something that should really interest a lot of people. And I think the guy that's really going to benefit, if that's sort of what we get, you know, more of a mixture of kind of half and half of what Auburn's been the last few years and sort of the old school pound it up the middle style of offense. I think Tank Bigsby's going to benefit a great deal from that. And he's going to have to, if that's sort of the order of operation, if that's what they want to do, because running back depth is going to be a real issue. I mean, right now they only have three scholarship running backs. One guy of those three was a defensive back. They just moved back to running back, and they're going to get another running back in the summer, but he'll just be a true freshman. But I think it could really benefit Tank if they really stick with what Bobo's saying is, you know, sometimes even getting an eye form and having one of those big tight ends like J.J. Pegues. That's what I think I want to see more than anything is J.J. Pegues, big 308-pound tight end playing fullback. Because he's already made plays this spring. He made a big block on Zakobi McClain in that open practice we talked about. But I think that's sort of what we can expect. I think it's going to be sort of a blend of sort of the spread and spreading teams out and passing downfield, but also not being afraid to kind of line up and just try to pound these teams and try to make the most of this offensive line, because that's going to be key. If that's what they want to do, Will Friend, who, you know, a lot of people know from his time at Georgia, and he's been at Tennessee and played at Alabama way back when, he's going to have to get the most out of this offensive line if that's exactly what they want to do.
Continuing with Jordan Hill from the OA News, and let's bounce out to the numbers. Javarius Johnson, at least the first, you know, couple weeks of practice, he was a name that a lot of people were pointing out, and not just offense, but also, I believe, punt returns as well. I will tell you that all I know about him, because he's been with the program a couple of seasons already, all I know is he's not the biggest fella in the world. What is his game, and has that initial sort of spark kind of maintained through the following practices?
I think so. I think he's been one of the guys that has benefited this spring. And you know, it's always interesting when there's a coaching change, there's going to be guys that were kind of buried in the depth chart that already, you know, just kind of pop up to this new coaching staff and they figure out ways to use them. And I think Javarius Johnson is one of those guys, at least from everything we've seen early on. He's not a big guy. He didn't really play very much while Malzahn was here, but he's really impressed. We've seen him playing in the slot so far with guys like Kobe Hudson and Elijah Kenyon out wide. I think he's got a lot of potential to be one of those slot receivers. You know, receivers probably one of the biggest question marks with this team, given their top three pass catchers left all going to the NFL from last year. So Javarius is going to be a guy that's going to step up, and I think he's got that skill set. He's a speedy guy. He's not the biggest guy in the world, like you said, to also fill that need at punt returner. I think that, you know, they lost Christian Tutt, who handled a lot of those duties over the last few years. He's also going pro. So he was getting looks at punt returner in the last practice we got to see. It was him, Sean Chivers. There might have been one other guy. But he makes a lot of sense to play that role and to really benefit from a wide-open receiving core, because, like I said, you got Kenyon, you got Kobe Hudson, but there are other guys, Xavion Capers, who was probably the most impressive of the true freshmen last year. He's banged up, and so is Shedrick Jackson, and Jackson's been around for a while now. So he's got a real opportunity, and from everything we've seen so far, he's taken advantage of it, and I think he's lining up well to be that guy that can count on in the slot.
We flip it over to defense before I let you run. This is no disrespect to anybody at Stanford when Derek Mason was there, because they had a lot of success and they put some guys in the league. But Derek Mason has never coached college athletes like he has access to at Auburn. And he has actually referenced that now a couple of times during spring. Just talk about some of the guys that may have popped onto his radar.
Yeah, I think he spoke really highly of the secondary, and I think, you know, Mason's background when he's coached defense has a lot of the time been in the secondary defensive backs. You know, Roger McCreary is a guy that I think could have gone pro this offseason, one of the cornerbacks. He decided to come back, so I think that's a huge gain, a huge plus that he's got a guy of that experience. And they've got some really experienced guys in the backside of that defense. You know, we talked the last time I was on about Jalen Simpson. He was a little bit banged up last year and kind of limited, but Mason was talking really highly about him. Smoke Monday, I think he is a guy that is going to really make a name for himself this year in the SEC. I mean, I think he's got the potential to be a first-team All-SEC safety. And based on what Mason's seen so far, he said this secondary group smokes a leader. You know, basically everybody else is following him, and he likes what he's seen out of him. I think the biggest question among the secondary is who is going to play the other safety position alongside Smoke. It was Jamien Sherwood last year. He declared early he's going to the draft. So far, and it's kind of been one of the bigger surprises. But Ladarius Tennyson, it was a guy that played nickel a lot last year right behind Christian Tutt. He's been getting the looks at safety, and he's just a rising sophomore. But what he played last year, you could see those flashes. You could see him being a guy that the defense can count on. And Kevin Steele talked really highly about him about midway through the year, just about what they had seen, even going back to fall camp. So, yeah, I think there's a lot to like really on all three levels. But to me, when you talk about what this Auburn defense can be, I think it kind of starts and ends with the secondary. There's a lot of talent. Mason and the rest of that defensive staff are really just trying to figure out who fits best where. And I think that's a good problem to have. You got a lot of talent. It's just where can you put them that will really maximize the amount of talent you can have on the field at one time and really lock down what we know is going to be some top-tier offenses this fall.
Last question for you. I actually want to bounce all the way up front there. I know that Auburn had an injury on the interior there, a tackle on the defensive line. Just give me an idea what you think that front rotation can look like, whether you want to assume health or you don't or whatever, because there's not a whole lot of depth up there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think the biggest negative so far of the first 2 weeks has been the fact that Jeremiah Wright, that's who you're talking about, a sophomore from Selma, he was probably right along with Javarius Johnson, one of the guys who had impressed the most. Hey, this was a guy they recruited to play offensive line. They moved him to defense last year. He was running with the first-team defense and then tore his ACL. Actually, in that last practice we got to go to on Thursday. So that was a huge blow because he was a guy that, you know, with what's probably going to be a primarily three-man front, he was kind of looked at as that guy in the middle. But they've got a few other options. I think it definitely hurts, like you said. I don't think they have a ton of depth there. And that could be another position that the transfer portal, you know, brings them another guy sometime this offseason. You know, it's just so hard to predict. But Zacharius Walker, I think, may be the guy that winds up stepping up in that role. He put on a lot of weight this offseason in that winter conditioning. He was a guy that played a decent bit, I think like 10 games in his freshman year and played some good snaps. I mean, showed that, you know, he had the potential of really growing into a reliable guy on the line. Another guy, too, that I think is probably in the mix to fill that spot is Marquise Burks, who when Jeremiah wasn't all in that practice Thursday, he was the guy that was running with the first team. JUCO guy. Played a little bit last year, didn't really, you know, wow, but got another year under his belt and could be a guy that's got a little more experience that they could stick in there. So I think it's fair to say that depth is going to be an issue and something that they're going to be looking at. And but they've got talent. I think it's just a matter of if a guy like Zacharius can take that next step after showing, you know, he had some real potential based on how he played as a true freshman. But, you know, to be counted on to play a bigger role alongside a guy like Tyrone Truesdale, who's been there and done that now for a while, it's going to be big. And obviously we know you got to win in the trenches if you're going to win the SEC.
Oh, yeah, a conference full of Deonte Browns is no place for a bunch of skinny 19-year-olds. That is for sure. Jordan, I appreciate your time, man. Thank you.
Always. All right. Appreciate it, Chuck.
All right. Again, Jordan D. Hill from AU Blog. That's on Twitter. That's the OA News, Opelika Auburn News, where Jordan works. And that's just kind of the reality of the Southeastern Conference is not a conference full of Deonte Browns, but full of big, giant, massive, strong human beings who probably have been there more than 1 year, which is what you have. And they like to beat on you. And by the middle of the third quarter, end of the third quarter, beginning of fourth quarter, you're looking around going, oh, good, it is natural grass. That's soft. Maybe I'll just find a soft place to land. It stinks, man. Especially, I'm telling you, the mentality, there is nothing more deflating than when the opponent starts running the ball and you realize, oh, yeah, this is what you always hear on TV, downhill. Yeah, this is what they're it when you can't stop the run and then by the final 15 minutes, the ball is snapped. And as soon as you engage as a defensive lineman, as soon as you lock on, what happens? Roller skates for about 2 inches until your cleats grab. But at that point, I mean, the best, you're playing for the tie on that play. People ask all the time, well, why is it, you know, you're on an 11 play or, you know, 7.5 minute drive. Why is that supposed to, why is that supposed to wear out the defense so much? Why don't I talk about the offensive lineman getting worn out? It's because of the chase factor. You know what you never see offensive linemen do in practice? Pursuit drills. You know what you see defensive linemen do every single practice, usually at the beginning when they still got some energy, is pursuit drills. I used to tell my kids, it's better to catch the guy at 25 yards downfield than miss him at 15. So what I just did is told two defensive tackles and two defensive ends, I need you to run 25 yards downfield, but it's not a 25-yard run. It's 25 yards downfield and about 30 yards that way. And I need you to do it like every play. Offensive linemen, when the back busts, most often they're like, oh, yeah, jersey numbers getting smaller. Bye. We make good blocks. Touchdown. I get a watch. Defensive players, all 11 of them. Pick them up, put them down. Pick them up, put them down. And so by the fourth quarter, when you've been doing that, and not Deontay because he's in the league, but whoever is across from your line of scrimmage, he's like, yeah, you just ran another 50 yards and I didn't. Can't wait for the ball to be snapped again. We're going to take a break and come back, wrap up hour one next.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
If I was a college head coach, or I don't even know what the title would be for this, recruiting coordinator, there is a title, but there's a lot that it could fall under. If you are the member of the coaching staff or support staff, who is responsible for monitoring the transfer portal? I know the first place I'm looking. Now, who determines what they want monitored? That's going to be the coaches and maybe, I don't know, special assistant to the head coach if you've got somebody who's just kind of playing out the string, looking for a smaller paycheck before he really retires. But if you're talking about determining, all right, what position? We have three scholarships left, and it's, you know, the end of May, and spring practice and the games are all done, and so we've got a bunch of transfers, and so now we can really finalize our schedule. What three spots do we want to hit? And then the coaches go back and forth, and they kind of fight and scrap a little bit verbally for their positions. Guys, that every single week you're going to be looking at us going, why can't we get off the field? We have to have the ball back to score. And I'm going to tell you, hey, at that meeting in May, I said I needed another defensive tackle or linebacker, safety or punter, whoever. So all the coaches say, I've got to have all three of them. And then the head coach decides stuff. Then there is a staff member tasked with going to identify potential players to contact who are already in the portal. If that's me, I am going to Blacksburg, Virginia first. Justin Fuente has 11 scholarship running backs. I don't even know how that's possible. They have, folks, they have 8 scholarships going through spring, scholarship running backs going through spring practice. They've got 3 more who, to this point, none of them wavering. They've got 3 more showing up this summer. Which means that they will have probably 4 or 5 departing later in the summer. Again, there aren't enough carries, even if you're triple repping things. So I'm going to say out of the eventually the 11 running backs, it'll never be 11. But one of them is really going to be a short yardage guy or maybe even a fullback. One of them on the smaller side is going to be bounced out to a slot receiver or maybe just play a lot on special teams, but we have to list him as something. What was Brandon James at Florida? Was he listed as a running back? I can't even remember. Because I know Rainey and Demps were running backs. Was Brandon James a running back as well? I think he was. But you got to list him as and they played. But most, like Trendon Holliday was listed as a wide receiver. Did he play receiver much? I think he just kind of caught kickoffs and tried to outrun everybody.
That's pretty much it, and that was what they tried to do with them in the pros, too.
Fantastic. Ace Sanders at South Carolina. I mean, everybody's got a position listed, but what's your position? Outrun everybody. And I've said there's every team, Alabama, okay? Every team, there's a spot on a roster for a kid like that, maybe even two. Can't fill up a recruiting class with them. Ace Sanders made plays. The littlest Gamecock of all. Those guys, there's a role. And so that guy, maybe he plays receiver or just mostly plays special teams. And then somebody gets switched to defense and then four transfer. So you will have probably, think about this. If half, can't have half, I'll round up. If they rounded up half of your scholarship players at that position, half transferred, you'd still have five players, not just five running backs, not just five scholarship running backs, five running backs that Justin Fuente looked at and went, mm-hmm, here you go, free school. I have no idea what to make of this team right now, mostly because I don't definitely know what to make at quarterback. Justin Fuente, man, he showed up with the reputation, and I saw it happen. See, I was there. The Andy Dalton thing at TCU, the Paxton Lynch became at least Andy Dalton, he was a second-round pick, and I bet he started for the Bengals. I bet he was the Bengals' starting quarterback, I'll say, 8 seasons. If you get 8 seasons as a starter from a – because Andy Dalton wasn't a first-round pick. Wasn't he a second-round pick? Yeah. Andy Dalton's a second-round pick. Folks, Justin Fuente helped Paxton Lynch become a first-round pick, and Paxton Lynch can't play. But he had an earned reputation of, give him a quarterback with a little bit of something, whether it was moxie like Andy Dalton or a howitzer on his shoulder of a 6'7 frame like Paxton Lynch. Well, Justin Fuente, I hope you dial it up, man. Has not happened so far. Now, I don't know if he's had talented quarter, or I don't know how talented the quarterbacks he's had in Blacksburg have been. But that has been one serious curveball for folks all around America, like me, folks all around America who had an understanding of what Justin Fuente was. And it hasn't turned out that way in his 5 seasons in Blacksburg. And I'm talking specifically the guy who can take a quarterback and turn him into what I say, whatever his 100% is. No, whatever his like 134% is and get him into the league. Hadn't happened so far.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
So, Robert, I want to thank you for your time. I just don't think you're the right person for this position.
I don't understand. Was it something I said?
Well, we did a background check on you and found some things of concern.
If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you know how helpful a background screening can be. That's why companies that use Horizon background screening make smarter hiring decisions. Don't let the wrong hire put your company at risk. Get the real story on your candidates at horizonscreening.com. Horizonscreening.com.